Welcome.
Hello once again, everybody, and thank you for joining me here on this Friday, March 2nd edition of Bang the Book Radio. My name is Adam Burke, your host for the next hour or so, as we go over all kinds of things in the world of sports from a betting focus. Glad to have you with me as we wrap up this week on Bang the Book Radio. It has been a crazy busy week. Then last night, I had my internet knocked out by a pretty serious winter storm that rolled through Cleveland area. So an hour delayed here with today's show, but wanted to make sure that we got this one out to you with the great Rolf Michaels from WagerTalk.com. We'll chat with him about the Colonial Athletic Association tournament, the Summit League tournament, and then also something we haven't touched on a whole lot here this week are those conferences that are still playing regular season games as they wrap up here on Saturday. So we'll chat about some of those games with Rolf. Over at bangthebook.com, tons of stuff for you to check out. This morning, while I didn't have internet, I was up at the library writing about the America East and the MEAC. Those will be posted this afternoon. Then over the weekend, I'll be doing all the conference tournament previews for the other leagues that have not started yet or have not been posted yet, at the very least. MLB season win totals, I've got 20 of those up now, the entire American League and the National League East, so you can check that out over at bangthebook.com. Parker Michaels back this week with his daily NHL picks. Great write-ups there with those. Doug Carson's NBA picks today as well. We got some great stuff from Lockie Lockerson with an NBA futures piece. Also a Gambler's Toolbox series that he's starting now. You can check out over at bangthebook.com as well, where we are your one-stop shop for sports betting news and information. Check out our free pick contest. You can win some cash prizes in those. Our sportsbook reviews as well. You know about that BTB25 promo code over at DSI. $25 free bet for signing up. 100% deposit match bonus for both the sportsbook and the live casino. Very, very important to be able to shop around at this time of year and at every time of year for the best lines, but especially now as we're looking at futures, conference tournament futures, and things of that sort. One guest here as we wrap up this week on Bang the Book Radio, that is the great Rolf Michaels from WagerTalk.com. Rolf, how's it going today, man?
It's going great, Adam. And I have a question for you, if I could put you on the spot. Listening to your intro, you were talking about baseball. I'm not a huge baseball fan. I'm just getting into it now. A lot of our listeners know I was at North Coast for 15-plus years. So, you know, I was football and then did my own basketball. As I'm moving more into baseball, you were talking about the baseball futures and your write-ups. There's, 100 free agents still out there. How much can one of the top free agents change how much you would adjust your win total on a baseball game?
That is a fantastic question. It is something that I have wrestled with a little bit. And, the guys really that you're talking about right now that are still out there, Jake Arrieta being the primary one, and then you've got, Alex Cobb was kind of a middle-of-the-rotation type of starter. With the right fit for somebody like Arrieta, I would say maybe you could move a season win total up a win and then maybe a little bit of juice, but nothing more than that. I don't think there's anybody left out there that's that big of an impact player over the, full 162-game season. Somebody like a J.D. Martinez signing with Boston, that's maybe a 1.5 to 2 win upgrade on their season win total. But right now, I would say a win, 1.5 at the absolute most for somebody like Arrieta. And I think what it has more of an impact on for me is it can be a deciding factor for me if I want to take a team or not, because depth is a big thing with me when it comes to the season win totals. And if you add a guy like an Arrieta, you automatically get a number two starter. You push a below average starter back to AAA or the bullpen. That's significant. But a lot of these guys right now, not too much of a season long impact, I would say.
Appreciate it.
Yeah, make sure you check out my write ups. I've got, as I said, 20 of those teams finished here so far. I'll post the National League Central either later today or tomorrow. I want to get as many of the West teams done here today as I possibly can. I'll talk more about this at the end of the show. I won't keep you for the full hour, obviously, Rolf, but I'll talk more about that at the end of the show with the timeline that I'm looking at for the rest of these season win totals. But let's chat some college basketball here. And, it's a great time of year. I know you and I were talking a little bit about trying to formulate next week's schedule, and that is something that I need to do because we've got a lot of day games later in the week with some of these really big, really deep conference tournaments with the leagues that have 14 or 16 teams in them, with them starting their conference tournaments, and they're all at neutral sites. A lot of day basketball, so that will likely change the schedule here that we're looking at for next week. But Rolf, what are you doing at this time of the year? I mean, you've got teams that are playing each other for a third time. You've got some conferences going on right now that aren't traditionally lined. Is it just crazy for you, or are you keeping everything, pretty organized and pretty well in hand?
Well, right now I'm just treating it as two different sessions. I'm doing my normal handicapping as I would, and then I turn and do my conference handicapping. And we've talked about it. Some of these off conferences, that are not normally lined. You have to look at them so differently than your normal power conferences. You have to break out their non-conference and their conference-only schedules. You have some teams that played, you know, a top 10 strength of schedule and other teams that played a 300 strength of schedule. So right now it's fine. And really, you know, when you get into the tournaments, even next week, you know, Wednesday, Thursday are the big days, but then you're breaking down and you have, you know, half the games that you would on Friday and Saturday. So, you know, while it's crazy because there's day games, it actually helps me because I'm breaking it into different segments. Yes, I'm starting earlier handicapping the day games, but once those day games are done, you take the night games as a separate segment, watch those games being played, and then start all over the next morning. So I'm just sort of segmenting a full day of handicapping into different sections.
Yeah, I think that makes a lot of sense. And, you know, you talk about teams playing big non-conference schedules. I mean, like I said, I wrote up that MEAC preview this morning. I haven't posted it yet, but there are four teams in the MEAC that rank in the top 37 in non-conference strength of schedule, and all of them are pretty bad in that league because, you know, it's just not a high-caliber league by any means. But, you know, I'll be curious to see what the odds look like here with a team like Savannah State, who's the 3 seed, but they played the second-hardest non-conference schedule in the country, not just in the conference. Maryland Eastern Shore played the 15th hardest. They were just 7-24. They're not a very good team at all. In fact, they're one of the worst teams in college basketball. But, you know, some of these conferences that don't get a whole lot of play, the Southland coming up next week, the SWAC as well. You know, maybe for some of our listeners out there, you just kind of look to bypass those, and no one will blame you for that. But, you know, again, so many more considerations here at this time of the year. And Rolf, something I do want to talk about a little bit here. You know, we're not going to talk about the Big Ten Conference Tournament because it's already started and, you know, there are games actually going on right now as we're recording here on Friday. But you look at a team like Nebraska, for example, who has a big game here in the 2:30 time slot against Michigan. And this is more of a segue into looking at some of those other teams that are, you know, firmly on the bubble that will start their conference tournaments next week. You talk about a team, you know, like an Arizona State, for example, Alabama, Baylor, another team that's on the bubble, USC, Texas. We'll talk a little bit more about USC and UCLA here for Saturday's game. But, you know, how do you approach these bubble teams, you know, especially the ones from the power conferences when they actually get going?
Well, you know, it's Nebraska's fault. They're where they are. I mean, they played the number 271st non-conference strength of schedule. And, you know, that's something Tim Miles has done before. You know, he's been there 5-6 years. But, you know, I look at Nebraska, and in my mind, I have them in. You know, you have 22 wins, and you're the number 4 seed in a major conference, one of the top 4 conferences in basketball. So to me, the regular season has to mean something. And if you're a top 4 seed, I would have them in for that reason, because of their schedule. You know, one amazing stat about Nebraska. Nebraska has actually covered 18 straight games against teams that aren't Illinois. They're 0-2 ATS against Illinois. They've covered their last 18 other games besides the Fighting Illini, and yet they're a dog today against Michigan, a 4.5-point dog as the 4 seed against the number 5 seed Michigan Wolverines.
Well, and it's such an interesting topic, too, especially when you talk about, you know, as I mentioned, teams like the Arizona States, Louisville, now also a team that's very, very firmly on the bubble, and that was not a great outcome for them last night, to say the least. That's a game that would have probably taken them off of the bubble discussion. Now, of course, they're sitting there firmly on it. Syracuse, a team that has, you know, a high-caliber tournament pedigree, and I think this is a very important thing to look at, too. With Syracuse and Notre Dame, both of them in the ACC here, I talk about this all the time with the college football playoff, in that if you can get Ohio State in the Final Four, you're going to do it because they're a massive draw. People love or hate them. Their fans travel extremely well, and they're a great team to talk about for the 6 weeks leading up to, you know, the actual national championship game. When you look at some of these bubble teams here this year, you got a bubble team like Washington, who, you know, they kind of came on in the football side of things when Chris Peterson took over. But from a basketball standpoint, you know, last year was Markelle Fultz on a bad team. This year it's a much better team without him, but they're in the bubble discussion. UCLA, a big-time name. Syracuse, a big-time name. Notre Dame, a big-time name. You know, you don't see that with Mississippi State, Marquette, Utah, you know, Nebraska, these types of teams. So, you know, is there less pressure on them because, you know, they have this name pedigree and, you know, may get the benefit of the doubt anyway? Or is there more pressure on them because they're expected to be there, and the kids know that.
Well, I think Syracuse and Notre Dame are at a different level than Washington. I agree with you. Washington's an up-and-coming program because of football. But, you know, Syracuse, having been done there, their run through, you know, their run through to the Final Four when, you know, perhaps they were overrated, overrated, you know, because of the run they made. But, you know, I think that, you know, the committee is going to look at it individually. But, yes, I completely agree that the pedigree, having been there and done that, having had success in the tournament, will certainly give you the flip-the-coin version between you and someone else with the exact same resume. Your name will get you into the tournament. Now, I don't think that's any less pressure because these kids are playing game in and game out knowing they're on the bubble. No matter what their coach says, no matter what their teammates say, you know, they all read the papers. They all read these last four in, last four out. And, you know, there's 1,000 different versions of who's in the tournament. Everyone becomes an expert March Madness on who's in the tournament. So, you know, I don't think it's less pressure on the players. I think, but if you ask me at the end of the day, if they have the exact same resume, yes, Syracuse gets in because of the name, but the players, I believe, still have all the pressure on them.
All right, we'll revisit that conversation here a little bit later in the segment when we start to look ahead to the Saturday card, and then, you know, next week we'll talk a ton about all of these major conference tournaments, and, you know, like I said, we'll probably be altering the schedule a little bit. I'm thinking we may only do Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday shows. We'll figure out a way to format that and get everything squared away, but Thursday, Friday, with day games throughout the day, it's very, very challenging for our guests to come on while they're trying to handicap the card, get things out to their premium clients. And then, of course, when March Madness week rolls around here, we will only do Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday shows. I believe both of those weeks is what we did last year. Probably do the same thing here this year as well, because on Thursday and Friday, all of us want to watch basketball and have fun with that. So note that scheduling change for our listeners out there. But Rolf, we got a couple of one-bid leagues here that I want to talk about, conference tournaments that haven't begun yet, beginning with the Colonial Athletic Association. This one at North Charleston Coliseum, College of Charleston, the de facto home team as a result, although this is not their home arena. But this is a one-bid league. Tournament starts on Saturday. Right now, College of Charleston, the number one seed, Northeastern 2, Hofstra 3, William & Mary 4, on down from there. What do you think about this conference here, Rolf? How do you feel like this one sets up?
Well, you know, you have the play-in games. You're going to have the 7, 10, and 8, 9 play, you know. And in those early games, you know, I do like James Madison, the number 9 seed, to upset Drexel. They're a young team that's been playing well. They are freshman loaded. In fact, the other day they had a game where 60 of the 65 points they scored were scored by freshmen. So James Madison is a team I'll keep my eye on. They're not going to get by Charleston, you know, in that situation. But I actually, you know, I like Northeastern to come out of the Colonial. They were 14-4 with the College of Charleston. Charleston swept them in the series. But Northeastern has what I always look for, you know, the number one defense efficiency in the conference. And the Colonial this year has been pathetic as far as defenses go. When you look at their national rankings as far as efficiency, you have Northeastern at 100, Towson at 170, Charleston at 184. Everyone else is in the 240s to 300 range. So I'm always going to take a better defensive team, especially when you're playing in these conference tournaments. The top two teams in the conference are clearly the class of the league. And again, I'm going to go away from the home team in this. And I'm a Northeastern fan, 21-9 on the year. They're 14-4 in tournament play. They were number one in the league in plus 6.8 points per game in conference only games. And they're my pick in that conference.
Yeah. And you've got them here at plus 250. And what would be really interesting to figure out, and I don't know if either one of us are qualified to speak to this point, but if this conference tournament wasn't in Charleston, South Carolina, if this thing was in, I don't know, we'll say maybe Columbia or Raleigh or something like that, I'd be really interested to see how much closer the gap would be between these two teams, where Charleston right now at five dimes plus 140, Northeastern 250, probably see Northeastern maybe more like a 2-1 shot if this thing was at a true neutral.
Well, you know, you do have an up and coming team. You know, they had a losing record last year. They were 15-16. They were 18-15 the year before. So you have a team that hasn't been there, doesn't have the experience. You know, on the flip side, you do have Charleston, who was the number 2 seed last year, and they ended up losing to the number 1 seed, NC Wilmington, in last year's tournament. So the experience of having been there, and a lot of people, if you're going to bet conference futures, I'll tell you what, the number 1 seeds are always so overrated. People see that number 1 and they just think that team is so much better than the number 2 team. And a lot of times that's not the case. Either they won one more conference game or they swept them as they did in this situation. Northeastern had a player banged up in their home game, which they lost by 5. But both of the Northeastern and Charleston games were January 11th and February 1st. Since that time, Northeastern has gone 7-0 in tournament play. So I rarely ever play a number 1 seed if I'm looking at conference tournament futures, because the number 1 team always, it seems to me, just is so overrated.
Well, and let's go to one of those conferences here where you've got the Summit League. This one also starts on Saturday night. All 8 teams in this one at the Sanford Center in Sioux Falls. South Dakota, or University of South Dakota, is in Sioux Falls, but again, this not their home barn. When you look at the Summit League here, South Dakota State, who is the number 1 seed, is 13-1 in conference play, had the most wins at 25-6. They are actually second on the board here with South Dakota plus 112 as the favorite. The Jackrabbits are plus 128. North Dakota State 14-1. Fort Wayne 16-1 on down from there. And, you know, this is one of those spots here, Rolf, where I think people are going to look at South Dakota State and say, well, the number 1 seed's not the favorite. I don't know what's going on here. I'm going to go ahead and take them. Maybe a little bit of, you know, reason to pause here.
I agree. I wasn't aware of that, to be honest with you. South Dakota State is by far the class of the Summit. They went 25-6 compared to South Dakota, which went 24-7. South Dakota State went 13-1 in Summit League action. South Dakota went 11-3. Oh yeah, by the way, you have the conference's best player by far in Mike Dumb, and you also have South Dakota State, who has won the last 2 tournaments. Last year was supposed to be their down year. They lost their coach to Wright State. They had made an incredible run, being the number 1 seed for 4 straight years. They were the 4 seed last year, and they still pulled it off and won. They won it in 2015. They were the number 2 seed. Mike Dom was the league MVP, was the conference tournament and league MVP both years. You have the best player in the league, the best record in the league. And to me, clearly, this is one situation where I will take the number 1 seed, because you are getting some value as they're the number 2 favorite.
I think something that we have to focus on here at this point, and I think this is a very interesting discussion, because one of our handicappers earlier on in the week, Kyle Hunter, said that he would have South Dakota favorite over South Dakota State on a neutral. So a little bit of a difference of opinion here, and that's always a good thing with a couple of very sharp minds to see where they stand. But this is one of those conference tournaments where we pretty much know who's probably going to be in the final, because the 2 South Dakota schools are so much better than the other teams here in this league. I mean, you see that from the conference standings. South Dakota was 3 games clear of Denver. South Dakota State was 5 games clear of Denver. So, you know, things should stack up to where the, you know, top 2 seeds do meet in the finals here. But then you start to look at this futures price and say, okay, is there a chance that South Dakota State is actually, you know, plus 128 in the championship game? I would say no. Whether you've got South Dakota or South Dakota State favored, you know, South Dakota State's not going to be as high as plus 128. So in that respect, there's a little bit of value here in playing the future on them.
I completely agree. Both are, you know, South Dakota's a little closer. South Dakota's about an hour away. South Dakota State about an hour and a half away. So that's irrelevant, as you said. Both in states, both are going to bring their fans, both are going to buy every ticket they can. But to me, again, you made a great point that, you know, Kyle may think they're favored. I'm going to say the game's around pick at a neutral. And you have a team that has pedigree. It's difficult to win multiple games in a row. And if you have a coach that's been there and done that, you have a team that's been there and done that, you have the conference's best player who's been there and done that, to me, that's a lot of backing and reasons to take that team.
Yeah, of course, for South Dakota here, I mean, this is a team that hasn't been in the Summit League for all that long, but they've never won this conference tournament. They actually joined the Summit League during the 2011-2012 season. This is their second year, with a winning record in conference play. Last year, they were 12-4, went to the NIT, got knocked out in the first round when they played Iowa. They lost that game by 12. So at least this is a South Dakota team with a little bit of postseason experience. You know, this is not a team accustomed to having some expectations and making a run here in the Summit League. So, you know, is that something you weigh heavily here at this time of the year, or is it something that you weigh heavily, you know, just when you're looking at making a bet or not making a bet?
Well, you know, you talk about South Dakota not having been there. South Dakota hasn't even been to the finals of the Summit League, and South Dakota State has been to the final game 5 of the last 6 years. So when we have a pedigree comparing it to a non-pedigree, I'm going to look at it as a factor. But most conferences aren't dominated by one team. You know, we've had the Wichita State, which moved on, and, you know, we've had some conferences that have had the domination. But for the most part, you don't have that 5-6 year domination where one team's been there and the other team hasn't. So while it's a unique situation, it's not something I look at when I get into the other conferences that have, you know, the 14 game conferences where you have a new different division winner each year.
All right. So we've got a very, very busy weekend on tap here on Saturday and Sunday with conferences that are still playing regular season games. We haven't talked about any of these leagues here really this week. We did a little bit on yesterday's show with Brad Powers. He talked about how he thought Xavier was a little bit overrated, Baylor was a little bit underrated, and then we touched a little bit on the Duke and North Carolina game. But, you know, when you think about conference tournaments here, we don't have the AAC, the A-10, the ACC, the Big 12, the Big East, the Big Sky going on down the line. We don't have the Big West yet, Conference USA, SEC, Pac-12. All these conference tournaments have yet to start. So those leagues still playing regular season games here at this point in time. And Rolf, you know, how do you handicap this last regular season game for teams? What are you sort of looking for?
Well, you know, I look for bad teams to continue to be bad. And the reason I say that is if you're a team and you're going through a losing stretch down the road and you're playing a couple road games, if there's something you've worked on in practice, or if there's something that you have a new wrinkle, you're probably not going to show it in those last couple regular season games. You know, your entire season hinges on those tournament games. So, you know, because people have to win and have pressure and this is the final weeks, I'm not going to look at those teams. We've talked about this before. Also, I look to play against teams that have reached 20 wins. You know, NC State is a perfect example last night. NC State's not a team that gets to 20 wins every year. NC State pulled some big upsets, beat North Carolina. They had a big game against Florida State to get to 20 wins. What do? Georgia Tech had lost 9 straight games since they lost their point guard. They go into Georgia Tech last night and they lose. So I look to play against teams that had hit that 20th win. And we also talked about markers before. I look to play on teams that are going to hit a magic number. You know, one example is North Texas. North Texas got a win last night, and now they're 15-15. They're going to be a favorite coming up on Saturday. We're going to talk about them more as a best bet. But if they're at 15-15 playing that final game, it's a huge difference to have a 16-15 regular season record than it is to be under the Mendoza line. So just record-wise, yes, records are important. Getting to 20, I usually look to play against. Teams are near that 500 mark. That extra last game can get an extra ounce effort from them as well.
Now, do you think, I mean, is that something that really only matters to teams that aren't used to reaching those types of heights, like in North Texas, who really hasn't been all that great, or an NC State team, as you mentioned, that, you know, was looking for its 20th win, got it, then had the flat spot? Because there are some teams here, as I'm looking, a team like Middle Tennessee State, for example, they just locked up their conference by beating Western Kentucky last night. They're 24-5, so in their regular season finale, they can go for 25 wins. Kansas is another team sitting on 24, so they can get to 25 wins. Butler is at 19-11, so they can get to 20. But these are all teams that are, you know, accustomed to having some success. So does that angle still work with them?
No, absolutely not. I mean, you know, when your team averages 28 wins like some of these teams have, 20 wins means nothing. That's not even I should say this, and let's backtrack a little bit. Teams that potentially have a goal of reaching 20 wins, if they reach that goal, then you want to play against them. Teams like a North Carolina Duke, nowhere are you going to see a goal of let's reach 20 wins. You know, their goal is probably to go undefeated at home, to win the ACC regular season, to win the ACC tournament, and to win it all. So teams that may have a 20-win season as their goal, or they exceed expectations by getting to 20 wins, then look to play against those teams.
Yeah, there are a couple of teams here as we're looking. Teams looking for some 20th wins here. You got Ball State, they're 19-11. Eastern Michigan is 19-11. Those are a couple of teams that, you know, aren't really accustomed to having those types of seasons. Wyoming and UNLV both going for 20 here this weekend. UNLV, you know, 20 shouldn't be a benchmark for them, but given some of the things that they've gone through the last few years, that is something that, you know, would kind of validate a little bit what's going on for them. What about some teams that are kind of in between, where you've got a team like Missouri, for example, or Texas A&M, both of them going for 20 wins here this weekend? You know, these are relatively premier programs in a pretty big conference in the SEC. Do you feel like, you know, 20 is kind of a landmark achievement for them?
Well, Missouri, definitely. I mean, Missouri last year was 8-24. 2 years ago, they were 10-21, and then 9 wins before. So in 3 years, they had a total of 27 wins, never reaching more than 10. So absolutely for Missouri, you know, you look at what they've done. They were at 18-8. They lost to LSU, Mississippi, and Kentucky. And then they win on the road at Vanderbilt, which they should. So now they're playing a better team again. You know, so far they've lost to better teams. Arkansas, you know, Arkansas is a team in my book that, you know, has taken advantage of some teams that were on a downslide. Arkansas is 7-1 their last 8 games. Their only loss to Kentucky, but they haven't had great wins. The win against Auburn has struggled. They did beat Alabama. A&M was in a funk. Mississippi, we know that they've been a train wreck since their coach left. Vanderbilt hasn't done well. South Carolina was in a funk. So I really don't know what to make of Arkansas, and I don't know what to make of this Arkansas-Missouri game on Saturday, because Arkansas hasn't beaten anyone playing well, and Missouri, again, is in that mode where they finished the season 1-3. I would tend to lean with Missouri, although it's normally a situation I play against, getting to that 20th win, but Arkansas hasn't proven anything, and Missouri is a team, you know, under Martin as their head coach, you know, this is only his first year. He did so well at California for 3 seasons, did so well at Tennessee. With his coaching resume, I think he can get him over the hump. And as we talk about this game and I talk it out looking at the schedules, I would tend to lean with Missouri playing against something I just talked about with the 20 wins. So while we talk about situations to look for, It's not an everyday case. Again, each game is individual, and there's no one situation where you're going to say, well, if they reach 19 games, I'm going to play against them on number 20. That's not always the case.
One other talking point here, and then we'll get into some of these specific games that I want to hit on, some of the premier games that are coming up on Saturday, is that some of these conference tournaments that haven't started yet will not take everybody. Conference USA is one of them. Charlotte is already out. UTEP and Rice battling it out for the last spot there in that one. How about the Ivy League? Big things happening in the Ivy League here tonight and tomorrow. Penn and Harvard are already in. We'll see which one of those two teams winds up the number one seed. I believe Yale is already in at 7-5 as well. I think they've got the tiebreakers over Cornell and Columbia. Then you've got Cornell and Columbia there at 5-7, Princeton and Brown at 4-8. The Ivy only takes 4 of the 8 teams to the conference tournament. So that's another betting angle to look at here this weekend with some conferences that don't take everybody. You've got some teams that are kind of, you know, fighting for either a spot in the conference tournament, seeding to get a bye to the quarters, or a, you know, double bye, something like that. You know, this is very important to look at this time of year as well.
Yeah, it is. And, you know, the funny thing is that the teams that are 5-7, Columbia and Cornell, They are playing Dartmouth and Harvard this week. They're co-partners, so they're going to play the same two teams. And Dartmouth, of course, the worst team in the conference. Harvard, the second best team. So, you know, you're going to expect both of those to go 1-1, and that's going to get them. That's going to get them into the tiebreaker. And between Columbia and Yale, I mean, between Columbia and Cornell, they split as well. So I'm not sure what the tiebreakers are after that, but. You know, they clearly know. And if someone does pull that upset, you know, if Cornell beats Harvard, I would then actually look to play against them. If they're off a huge upset and they know that they have the tournament in front of them and now they're going to be a sizable favorite, that's a situation where I would look to play against tomorrow. Again, you're playing back-to-back days, and it's something I'll be watching for Saturday.
Well, and that's another angle that I didn't even really think about is, you know, now you've got a team like Dartmouth, who is the worst team in this conference. They're just 2-10 in conference play. You know, if Cornell doesn't have a whole lot to play for tomorrow, and I mean, they should, because if they upset Harvard, you know, Columbia should beat Dartmouth. So they'll still have something to play for. But as you mentioned, to cover that big of a number against a Dartmouth team, it's probably going to be like, you know what, this is our last game. It's been a long year, but this is our last game together. It'll be senior night. It always is for this last home game. So, you know, sometimes you get some teams that are maybe kind of dead in the water going into that last home game, but they rally. They've got something to play for, you know, positive feelings going into the offseason, whatever the case may be. You know, that's an interesting spot to look at. And, you know, plenty of those things here with these final regular season games that we're looking at this week. And we won't really have spots like that in the three games that we're going to focus on here, Rolf. But let's start with Kentucky and Florida. This is an early tip-off on Saturday in the SEC. Florida going for its 20th win. Not that that's really a landmark thing for them, because that's a program that has had a lot of success. Kentucky, one of those teams, you know, it's kind of in their best interest to round into form as much as possible going into the conference tournament, and they're doing that right now with four straight wins.
Boy, I'm a Kentucky fan. I had them against Mississippi as one of my top plays of the month just on Wednesday night. And what they're doing rounding into form is to playing defense. They've held their last four foes to 41% or less, including one foe to 36% shooting. You know, they now are in that form I want. They know how to play on the road. That's not a hindrance for them. You know, the Florida team is a team that when they're not playing a good defensive team, they do well. You know, in their last nine games, they've won and covered every game that they shot 46% or more. They're 0-7 straight up in ATS if they've shot less than 46%. And this is clearly a situation where I think that Kentucky's defense, the way they're playing, the way Florida has struggled down the road, I don't think Florida gets to that percentage. I don't think they'll have enough offense to cover against Kentucky. Again, they played Auburn and Alabama. Auburn in the funk, we know. Alabama was a good win. They finally got a good win this past Tuesday on the road. But returning home, I'll be a Kentucky fan in this one. You know, I have the line, you know, I have the line somewhere right around Pick'em. It's not going to be more than a basket either way. And I don't think Kentucky will be the road favorite. They burned enough people early in the year, and I don't think people think this four-game stretch that they're through is enough to say that the Kentucky Wildcats are back to where we expect them to be a Elite Eight Final Four team, although they may. It's a game where I think Kentucky finishes with a fifth straight win and Florida finishes with another loss.
And this is a big one, you know, for both of these teams in terms of kind of rounding into form for the conference tournament, but also because these two teams are right on the cut line for that bye into the quarterfinals for the SEC tournament. The 5 seed will have to play on Thursday. The 4 seed won't have to play until Friday. These two teams right now sitting 4-5 there in the SEC. And of course, I don't know what the tiebreaker process is with Arkansas right now, but you know, again, seeding considerations, very important here as you look at some of these matchups. And Rolf, let's move on to this game between TCU and Texas Tech here. This one, the Big 12 regular season finale for both of these teams. And right now, Rolf, it's not a real good look for Texas Tech. They've dropped 4 straight. Keenan Evans is laboring on the floor. TCU's 1-4 straight. Can the Red Raiders rally here and get some positive feelings going into the tournament? Or is this, you know, kind of a sinking ship? And we see another example of that this weekend.
Well, if Keenan Evans isn't on the court like he was for West Virginia, then it's a sinking ship. I mean, he only played 18 minutes. They come in with four straight losses. He played 18 minutes against Baylor in that two-point loss, played 25 minutes against Oklahoma State, played 31 minutes against Kansas. We thought he was back, and then he missed the West Virginia game where he retweaked that injury. So without Keenan Evans, I am certainly not going to back them. I think that they relied on him so much. They relied on their defense so much early through the year. I mean, they're, as far as defense efficiency for the season goes, they're a top five team, but we haven't seen that, allowing 79 points to Oklahoma State, 74 to Kansas, and 84 to West Virginia. If you don't have the offensive person that can run some clock when you're trying to slow the tempo and you need Keenan Evans to do that, then all of a sudden your defense gets some flaws. So for me, it's wait to see with Keenan Evans, and it's a game that I'll probably pass on, because even if they say Keenan Evans is going to play, there's so many times that we see a player who plays and is not 100%, and he might as well not even be playing. Well, if your name's Keenan Evans and your team is the Texas Tech Red Raiders, if you have the ability to play, you're going to be on the court for this final game. But again, not knowing how healthy he's going to be, if he's going to play at all, it's a game I will pass on and just watch and wait till the tournament comes around.
Yeah, and I can tell you I'm pretty concerned right now about the situation with Texas Tech. I got a very good futures number on them earlier on in the season, and right now, you know, it really doesn't look as good with the way that they're Keenan Evans banged up. So, you know, I'm kind of hoping, honestly, that he doesn't play here. And truth be told, I wouldn't mind if he didn't play in the Big 12 tournament either, just to get ready for March Madness. But, you know, that's certainly not going to be the case, because, as you mentioned, you know, he is the leader of this team. He is the guy that, you know, stirs the drink. I mean, he's the leading scorer and probably the best defender for the Red Raiders as well. So, you know, they obviously have some considerations there. But speaking of considerations in the Big 12, Kansas has already won the conference. Iowa State has already locked up the 10th seed in this Big 12 conference tournament, so they will be playing right away there on that first day. So maybe some betting angles to consider for those two teams here. Kansas plays Oklahoma State, who doesn't really have any tournament prospects unless they win the Big 12 tournament. And then Iowa State playing Oklahoma, it certainly would benefit Oklahoma to, you know, not slip up there in a game like that. So a couple of seeding considerations there in the Big 12. Ralph, one more game to talk about here, and this is a huge game for both of these teams, because both of them squarely on the bubble right now. Out in the Pac-12, UCLA takes on USC. If you look at Joe Lunardi right now, he's got USC as a last four in, and the first team on the first four out list is UCLA.
Well, you know, this is a game that, since they're travel partners, you know, you haven't played since last Saturday, so you have the week to rest. You know, I wasn't able to find if Benny Boatwright for USC is back. Benny Boatwright's missed the last three games. To me, USC can be an Elite Eight team with a healthy Benny Boatwright. He is, you know, he's just the person in the middle that the offense has to run through for them to be effective. You know, again, he's missed the last three games, but you do have USC now finally playing some defense. Four straight wins. You know, you hold Colorado and Utah to 64 and 58 points on the road. You just went through one of the toughest road trips we've talked about. We talked about the Pac-12 in the past and the road pairings on how you have to go to Colorado and Utah and play that elevation. Well, the same UCLA team just went to Utah and Colorado and lost both of those games by a total of 10 points. So as far as momentum goes, you know, in this game, I like USC. I like the way they handled that road trip. I like the way they're playing defense. You look at UCLA, again, they allowed 84 and 80 points to Colorado and Utah, 78 points to Oregon at home prior to that, and even 68 points to Oregon State is a lot the way the Beavers play. So in this game, I have USC about a 4.5-point favorite. I like USC to win the game. If Benny Boatwright's going to play, I like him to cover that number. If not, you know, it's going to be another close-scoring USC-UCLA game like we usually have. The first one, UCLA won by 3 at home back on February the 3rd. But Boatwright, to me, again, is one of those guys that he's a game-changer for me. He may not be the leading scorer. He may not be the leading rebounder. But watching enough USC games, to me, he's the most valuable player on that team.
And USC is amazing. I mean, not only did they sweep this altitude doubleheader, which I know we talked about, you had the stats for it a few weeks back when we were talking about, you know, situational spots and conference play. Now, not only did they sweep that, they also swept the Oregon doubleheader as well, beating the Ducks and the Beavers by 5 and 7 respectively. Again, maybe not the most impressive margin of victories, but still, if you can sweep those, you know, because we talk about the games being grouped here in the Big 12, if you can sweep some of those road trips, that is very, very impressive. And two of their three losses here of late, UCLA by a bucket on the road, Arizona State by a bucket on the road, third straight road game, they got blown out by Arizona, but that's going to happen, you know, when you're playing three in a row on the road. So for USC here, definitely a team with some upside. And also for those looking for some Pac-12 betting angles this weekend, Arizona has already won the conference. They're the one seed. USC is locked into the two seed, but this is a big game for them. As I mentioned, being on the bubble, Oregon State, Washington State, Cal are your 10, 11, 12 teams. So, you know, may not see too much of an effort from those respective schools here this weekend. Rolf, you got a couple of best bets for us for Saturday?
You know, I have game 576, North Texas. This is something we didn't talk about the show, but I want to take a quick minute. And it's something I often use handicapping. And it's first-year head coaches with very young teams. You know, I used Rice and North Texas last night as two of my plays. You know, both teams, Rice is a team that's 6-23 on the year, but they had a first-year head coach. They've gone 7-2 their last nine games. They knocked off UTEP yesterday. The Mean Green are the same thing. If you look at the Mean Green and you say they're 14-15, well, that's an upgrade for them. They got a first-year head coach in Grant McSland. They were only 8 wins last year, and they knocked off UTSA yesterday. Now they're playing a UTEP team that's 1-11 straight up on the road. They have a 15-15 record going for a winning season. And their last six home games, they're 4-2 straight up. Their losses to Western Kentucky in overtime, a great loss, and to Marshall by 2, a game they covered. They start 3 sophomores, 1 freshman, 1 junior. Very young team, first-year head coach. The straight-up wins weren't there, but the ATS record was. They continue to play hard, and I think they finish strong. UTEP, again, we know they've gone through their coaching changes. Tim Floyd stepped down back in beginning of January. They're 2-8 their last 10. They're only 10-20 on the season. The only two covers they had in the last 10 were both at home. They're just ready to get done with the season and be done with it. So that's game 576, North Texas. And then on Sunday, I'll tell you what, I like Wichita State against Cincinnati. You talk about the Cincinnati team that has only beaten one top 60 team all year. I don't understand the love Cincinnati gets. Yes, they have a pressure offense. Yes, they do well at home. Yes, they can run up against some teams. The only top 50 team they beat was Houston at home, and then they lost to them on the road. Wichita State will be a zoo on Sunday. They get to host Cincinnati. They stepped up in conference play this year, and I think they run Cincinnati off the floor, and that'll be a fantastic game to watch.
Two strong opinions there from Rolf Michaels of WagerTalk.com. Rolf, what do you got going on over at the website right now?
You know, just cranking away. It's been one of my best basketball seasons I've had. I've got a March Madness special, $2.99 at Wager Talk. Check out the NBA stat sheets, and I'll be doing a March Madness guide on there as well.
Yeah, Rolf, you've had a fantastic season, not just with your personal handicapping, but also here on the show. You've been a terrific asset for us. I'm so glad that we've got you on the program each week. And like I said, we'll talk off air here about trying to figure out a good schedule that works over the next 3 weeks. But thank you so much for joining me and for your patience today with everything that was going on my end. We'll talk to you again next week.
Thanks, Adam. Appreciate it.
Great stuff there with Rolf Michaels from WagerTalk.com. And again, for our listeners out there, you definitely want to make sure that you pay close attention to Monday's show or to me on Twitter or, you know, who are at Bang the Book Twitter account, because we will have some scheduling changes here over the next 3 weeks, trying to make sure that we fit all of this analysis in prior to the conference tournaments. What I can tell you is that we'll do the Monday mailbag again on Monday. So send me your questions on Twitter at Skating Tripods or Adam at bangthebook.com. You can email me now. We set up a bangthebook.com email address for me. So those are two ways to get your Monday mailbag questions in. If they're about college basketball, MLB, NHL, college football, NFL, the industry in general, whatever you want to ask me about, please hit me up. Again, that's at Skating Tripods on Twitter, Adam at bangthebook.com. that'll get forwarded to my Gmail account. So we'll do the Monday mailbag here on Monday. Probably do a little bit of an abbreviated version again. We'll be with Kyle Hunter of huntersportspicks.com on Monday. Tuesday, we'll have probably Brian Blessing and Tony George. I may wind up doing a two-hour show on Tuesday if I can line it up with Brad Powers and Rolf Michaels. Then that way we can get those guys on early in the week because there are tons of conference tournaments to talk about. We also talk about March Madness, NCAA tournament futures prices. That's typically what we do. Excuse me. That'll probably be the format that we have over the next 3 weeks. Don't quote me on that because I need to confirm schedules with everybody, obviously, for that. But you know, typically that's what we've been doing is moving the Tuesday guests or the Thursday guests, excuse me, to Tuesday, doing about an hour and a half on Monday, 2 hours on Tuesday, however long we need on Wednesday. That's pretty much been the plan for us. I may separate Brad and Rolf between Tuesday and Wednesday. But either way, we'll get all those guests to you here over the next 3 weeks. But I know for a fact that we will not have Thursday and Friday shows the week of March Madness. So that's the 15th and 16th. And then probably not on the 22nd and 23rd either, because you've got obviously Sweet 16 action those 2 days and the games are spread out throughout the day. So, you know, really doesn't help any of us to have a quick turnaround with the information here on the show. It doesn't help our guests because they're handicapping the card, trying to get things out to their clients and, you know, set up their second half and live plays and all that type of stuff. So what I would say is that the next 3 weeks will only be on Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, but we'll have all of our regular guests. I can also tell you that next week on Wednesday, we'll have a conference tournament preview show with myself and Kyle Hunter. I'll be in studio Tuesday night, so we'll record that Tuesday night for Wednesday's show. That may not be all that we do on Wednesday. Again, just lots of moving parts here. I know that this is kind of confusing for you. It's also confusing for me thinking about how I'm going to schedule all this stuff. But it's what we've traditionally done here the last 2 years, and it should be what we do here this year as well, to get all of that information to you in a timely fashion. You know, with the recorded segment with Kyle Hunter, I may post that Tuesday night when I get home just to make sure that that gets up quickly for you, and especially if I'm doing a live broadcast on Wednesday with some other guests. So, again, lots of stuff here going on in the month of March. That last week of the month of March will be a little bit different as well. So, you know, again, just try to bear with us as we try to get you all the information we possibly can. There will also be tons of information over at bangthebook.com. Like I said, I'll be writing up, I think I've got, 18 conference tournament previews that will need to go up here on either Sunday, Monday, or Tuesday of next week. So crazy times here, lots of busy stuff going on, you know, and if I can ask for one favor from our listeners out there, share our work, share the things that we have going on here. We've got, our writers are very committed to working as hard as possible. I know I've got, I think I wrote 54,000 words. 54,805 words for the American League. I've already got over 17,000 out for the National League East. I work very, very hard on those. So if you can give me some retweets, give me some likes, banter with me on Twitter, you know, banter with our other writers as well, with our show guests. You know, a lot of people sacrificing a lot of time here at this time of year to present you the best information and analysis possible, whether it's on Bang the Book Radio or whether it's over at bangthebook.com. So again, you know, we like to promote our guests here on the shows, but if you can help us by promoting them, by promoting us, you know, we'd certainly appreciate it here at this time of year with so many things going on. So again, a little bit of a different schedule here the next 3 weeks, but bear with me with that. And I should have a clearer picture on Monday as I'm doing the Monday mailbag, give you an idea of what you can expect for the rest of the week on Bang the Book Radio. So hey, it's just, it's a great time of year. It's a hectic time of year, but we're very happy to be bringing you all of this information and analysis. And, you know, I certainly hope that you appreciate it as much as I appreciate doing it. And that is one thing I do want to say here before I take a look at some situational angles for this weekend in the NHL is that my guests are phenomenal people. You know, I've got Kyle Hunter coming on with me twice a week here to get all this conference tournament stuff out there, to get all this March Madness stuff out there. He's a very, very busy guy. You know, he's got two kids, a wife. He's up 3/4 of the night handicapping the card and putting together all of his information. And I cannot thank him enough for coming on the show twice a week. I've had Brad Powers doing some segments with me and those studio segments. Again, I cannot thank him enough for all of that. Rolf Michaels has been very patient with me here with some scheduling changes. And then today with the internet being out, you know, he's been fantastic. You know, Wes Reynolds is always great joining me on the show here, getting Brian Blessing, you know, when Brian Blessing helped out on that Friday show, when, you know, things kind of went a little bit haywire. I can't thank him enough for that. Got some great guests and some great people that I work with here on Bang the Book Radio and at bangthebook.com, and some good friends in the industry as well. So, you know, as I'm sort of having a little bit of a monologue here to wrap up this week, I want to thank all of those people. And of course, thank you listeners as well, because without you guys and gals, I wouldn't have a platform to do this show. There'd be no one listening to us, nobody reading, no reason for us to do it. So thank you to all of you that are out there tuning in all the time. All right, so let's chat some NHL situational betting spots here. And I do think that there are some very, very good ones as we're looking ahead to Saturday and Sunday. And we've got a pretty good one here on Saturday, I think, with the Arizona Coyotes. It's one of my favorite spots of the week. I talked about this in my situational betting article, which you can find every Sunday at bangthebook.com. So the Ottawa Senators are playing the Vegas Golden Knights here tonight. And not only are they playing Vegas tonight, they had Wednesday and Thursday off in Las Vegas. Now, I don't know if they flew in on Thursday, but this is a lost year for the Ottawa Senators. It is a very, very bad time of year for them. Erik Karlsson will be traded over the offseason. It was a little bit surprising he wasn't traded at the trade deadline, but it's been a tumultuous season, to say the least, for the Eastern Conference runner-up from last year. They're a massive dog here tonight. Vegas actually opened a 270 favorite at Bookmaker. Anywhere from 245 to 260 out there in the marketplace right now. But tomorrow, Ottawa plays the Arizona Coyotes. And Arizona is a very, 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 very bad team. The Coyotes have played a lot better here of late, but this is a team right now, 19 wins on the season. Of their 63 games, they've only won 19 of them. They are a rested team taking on Ottawa tomorrow night. As we're looking out there in the marketplace right now, BetOnline has this game minus 130 on the overnights. That's one nice thing about having a little bit of a delayed show here is that I've got a price for you on this game. And I actually said my situational betting article, you know, I'd play Arizona up to minus 130-ish. Right now they are minus 130 out there. With this back-to-back for Ottawa, coming off of a couple days off, at least Thursday night off in Las Vegas there, I'm expecting nothing, absolutely nothing, from the Ottawa Senators in that game tomorrow night. And it is challenging to lay the price with Arizona as a favorite, but this is one of those situational spots that you dream about. I think that Arizona's in a very good spot for this one. It may lose, you know, and that is something I have to throw out there. Variance happens. Things happen. Arizona maybe doesn't win the game. You know, they're a bad team with expectations here, but I think this spot sets up very, very nicely for the Coyotes. So that is a play that I'm definitely looking at for tomorrow night. I'll be curious to see where the rest of the marketplace opens this thing up. But, you know, for right now, I think Arizona's at a very, very good price. They're 11-18-4 at home, 7-2-1 in their last 10. So they've played extremely well here of late. John Chayka doing an interesting rebuilding job there. And, you know, for Arizona, you got a lot of guys that have to buy into a GM being younger than they are. And also, you know, the analytics direction that Arizona's gone. So not a big surprise to see them struggle early in the year, but they've played much, much better here of late. And those are the types of spots that I look for. They're the types of spots that I circle on Sunday when I write the article. You hope for everything to come together for them. But for Ottawa, I think it comes together perfectly. You get Karlsson. They know that it's a lame duck situation the rest of the year. Coming off of playing in Vegas, I think Arizona is just such a great play here on Saturday night. Pretty interesting game. 8 o'clock puck drop between Toronto and Washington. And what makes this game interesting is that it will be played outdoors at Navy Marine Corps Memorial Stadium in Annapolis, Maryland. This is an outdoor game. I think the outdoor angles are very, very overplayed at this point, but there are two things I really like about this situation for Washington. One is that Washington is not as fast of a team as Toronto. Toronto is an up-and-down, offensive-minded type of team, and these outdoor games can be very challenging. You know, we've seen a lot of adverse conditions in these games. I'm pulling up the weather report for Annapolis here for tomorrow, but you know, we see a lot of times where these teams do tend to struggle a little bit that, you know, need offensive creativity, need flow, need rhythm. Toronto is not a good team in its own defensive zone. Forecast for Saturday, partly cloudy, a little bit breezy. So teams, you know, will be changing ends halfway through the third period and all that, but expected to be pretty windy conditions here. 15 to 20 mile per hour winds, gusts as high as 32 miles per hour. That will slow down a team like Toronto. Now, maybe they'll get that that tailwind kind of blowing up their asses a little bit when they're going the opposite direction of the wind. But still, Toronto's a team that needs to play an offensive style to win games. I think an outdoor surface really hurts a team like that. You know, I remember watching them play when they were playing against the Red Wings at the Big House at Michigan Stadium. So that was a spot where it was snowing. It was terrible conditions. Toronto was a little bit different of a team at that point, but the game was in complete slow motion. And we could see something like that here on Saturday night. So I think that gives Washington a bit of an edge. They're a minus 125 favorite on that Bet Online opener. That price is maybe a little bit steeper than I wanted it to be, especially because Toronto clearly the better team here right now than Washington. But I will be watching this line closely. And I think that, again, the conditions for this game do help a team like Washington. So that'll be one for you to watch there a little bit in that one. Rangers and Edmonton, two teams that are completely tanking here right now. Rangers in a back-to-back. They're playing Calgary on Friday night. The overnight line at BetOnline has Edmonton a $2 favorite in this game. That is remarkably steep. I would not touch that at all, but that is a pretty interesting situational spot there in that one. How about this spot on Saturday? Nashville takes on Colorado. For Nashville, fourth road game in about 5.5 days. It's actually a 3 p.m. local time game for the visiting Predators. Lots of afternoon games on Sunday. No NBC game because they're televising the outdoor game. But for Nashville, very, very difficult spot here. You're playing that fourth game in 6 days, 5.5 with the early start, playing in altitude in Denver. Very, very challenging for the Predators, who are playing outstanding hockey right now. They've rattled off 6 in a row going into action tonight, where they'll take on Vancouver, playing very, very well. But this is a difficult spot. Colorado not playing so great. They're right there on the cusp of the playoffs with all the teams in the West. They're kind of jumbled together. But for Colorado here, you know, home ice advantage, they've gotten back to it this year under second-year head coach Jared Bednar. Last year, Bednar was hired very late in the process, didn't have a lot of time to get acclimated to his players. Colorado was terrible. This year, much better team, 22-8-1 at home. You know, Nashville 18-7-6 on the road, so they've played very well on the road. That's tied for the second most wins in the Western Conference away from home. But a difficult spot with that early start time in Denver, fourth game in 5.5 days. I think if you get Denver at a Colorado, at a decent price, and you should, I think they'll be a home dog in this spot. I think they're a pretty good-looking team to play here. How about this back-to-back for Chicago? The Blackhawks play the Ducks on Sunday. Consecutive 1 p.m. Pacific time puck drops. They will play an afternoon game, a 4 o'clock Eastern time game, 1 o'clock Pacific time game against the Kings on Saturday. And they play the Ducks, another afternoon game, on Sunday. Very, very weird for Chicago here in this spot. Of course, Chicago, not a very good team anyway. They're falling out of the playoff picture. Anaheim needs to be racking up some points here. They haven't done a great job of it, losing their last two games. They do play tonight against Columbus. They're a pretty comfortable favorite in that one. I think Chicago's in a very difficult spot on Sunday. I would look at Anaheim at a pretty reasonable price there if they get one. And if not, maybe you play the minus one. You can play regulation. You can give a shot to the puck line. I generally don't love playing puck lines, but this may be a spot here with Chicago in a very, very weird back-to-back, and then they head back home. So, you know, very, very challenging spot there for the Blackhawks on Sunday. One other game to look at here. This is a bad spot for both teams, so I don't know how I want to look at this one, but Vegas is in New Jersey on Sunday. This is a 5 o'clock Eastern time puck drop. So Vegas makes the cross-country trip after tonight's game, so they'll fly out to the East Coast on Saturday, then play an early game as they try to get acclimated to the time change with a 5 p.m. puck drop against New Jersey on Sunday. But the Devils are first home game back off of a road trip, which is generally a fade spot for a lot of teams. Vegas, first road game outside the Pacific time zone since February 6th. So a bad spot for both teams. I'll be curious to see the line for this one. My lean right now without seeing a number is New Jersey. But again, two very bad spots there for those teams. So that's what I do in that situational article every Sunday over at bangthebook.com. Maybe you're not a big NHL handicapper, but it's a good way for you to get accustomed to some betting tips there and some things that maybe you can carry over to the upcoming season. But again, Arizona on Saturday night, one of my favorite plays in the NHL that we've seen here in a while from a situational standpoint. I'll be looking to play that one. And, you know, who knows, maybe grab that overnight there with that minus 130 price over at BetOnline. Well, been a great week here on the show. I think we talked about a lot of things, a lot of great conference tournament betting angles, and some good regular season angles here from Ralph Michaels on today's show as well. Coming up on our Monday edition of the show, Monday Mailbag, send me your questions at Skating Tripods on Twitter or email them Adam at bangthebook.com. We'll also hear from Kyle Hunter of HuntersportsPicks.com. So really looking forward to getting into some more conference tournaments next week. A lot of the heavy hitters, a lot of the big-time conferences, lines have been out for them for a little while, so we should have everything that we need for that Monday edition of Bang the Book Radio. That'll do it for me. Thank you so much for listening, everybody. Have a happy, healthy, smart, safe weekend, and I will talk to you again on Monday.